Hello, my name is Tucker Johnson, and I am your host today as we experience NIMSY Live, where we talk about the latest and greatest in translation, localization, internationalization, culturalization, and all that fun stuff global companies need to delight their international customers. On this program, we like to invite guests who like to have fun and have some value to add for our audience of globalization professionals. I'm always eager to provide a platform to those with a good story or a good data set. So, if there are any topics you'd like covered or guests that we should reach out to for future episodes, please let us know. Send us a line, live@nimsy.com. If you haven't already done so, make sure that you are subscribed to NIMSY Insights. We are coming to you live today on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and probably a few other places. All of our episodes and some workshops and other useful materials are over on our YouTube channel, so go subscribe to NIMSY Insights over on YouTube. If you're following us here on LinkedIn, you will be one of the first people to know when NIMSY Insights publishes new industry research or when we schedule new events like this. A quick plug for upcoming events. NIMSY is going to be at Localization World next week in Monterey, so we look forward to seeing you there. We have 8 or 9 people, I think, so you will, your cup will overflow with NIMSY consultants and account managers and customer success managers at Localization World. So we look forward to seeing you there. So without further ado, I'm going to get into our topic today. Uberization is a word that has come into our common vocabulary over the years, meaning the platformization of work and representing what we call the gig economy. While the company Uber is famous for providing rides and food delivery services, many do not know that they do much more than this. Managing their core technology and supply chain management capabilities for a whole host of services. Today, we talk to Hamid Afsari, who needs no introduction for many in our industry. Hamid has been Director of Localization Services for Uber and is taking an increasingly expanding role overseeing Uber's global scale solutions team, providing AI data labeling, annotation, testing, and localization for all of Uber's internal requirements for 8 years. Recently, the team has begun externalizing these solutions to companies like Niantic, Luma AI, Voxel, Aurora, and others around the world that want to take advantage of the expertise that the team has developed internally. All of these changes are positioning Uber as a company to drive forward innovation, not just in the ride-sharing space, but in developing the AI economy as well. Hamid, good to see you. Welcome to the show.
Good to see you as well, Tucker and Renato and everyone online. It's a great pleasure to be here with the industry expert. We'll see you in live in Lockwood as well soon. And I'm very pleased to talk about all the new services that we are offering, extending our marketplace, supply demand, beyond rides and delivery and freight and all that. It's only a natural extension of what we built past 10, 15 years that where we also offer this, what we built internally over the last few years. And we, I don't want to say we perfected it, but we optimized it. Now we are ready to offer similar services externally to large and small companies. As you know, Uber can scale up and down. You can take a ride, 10 or 15 people. You can take high velocity buses in from Cairo to Alexandria in Egypt, 10, 15 people riding a bus, or you can have a very personalized ride just yourself in a luxury car in Dubai or in the US, or take an Uber Bolt. So now imagine you do that same thing to localization testing, digitization, and others. You need to localize into one language or 100, we are here. You want to edit something, we are here. You want to use LLM, your own LLM, but you need another pair of eyes, look at it. We can bring you that all in one place. And you don't have to pay a fixed cost for that. Just imagine you use, you pay for what you use.
Oh, just like Uber. Or just like rides,
yeah,
right.
So the interesting thing I think that is
and really quickly what an introduction to my co-host today who wasn't on the ticket. You weren't advertise for this, but you're joining us today. Renato Beninato, my co-founder here at NIMC Insights, who will ask all of the smart questions, and I will nod and stroke my beard.
It makes it exciting. You know, we might get too technical in depth and say, hey, get your elevator pitch here, man.
Yeah.
So thank you for being the, you know, the elevator operator on all time. Will press the button for you?
Well, the question is basically the rationale behind this, right? Yeah. But I think that about a year, I don't remember exactly when, Dara, the CEO of Uber, announced that now that the company was profitable, you were going to, it was at the last year's Super Bowl around that time that you started advertising that it was not only going to be Uber rides and Uber food, Uber Eats, you were going to use the same idea of matching demand, supply and demand. So you have people who provide services. So if you need a plumber, you have a platform that you would provide a plumber. If you need a driver, you have a platform that provides a driver. If you need a truck, and eventually all services need a platform. And your organization started providing these services where you need people to annotate data, to test software, to translate words, and you have a platform that matches people to demand. Is that what drove the development of the services for the market?
Exactly. So when you have already built a massive scale platform with a lot of data, and you know the economy of scale, and you know the workforce in 11,000 cities worldwide, and you have access to them, you have already figured out the payment system, you've already figured out the peak hours and downtime. Now you can bring that same logic to other areas. It's a knowledge economy. It's all LLM is about knowledge. So imagine you now find the people, the right people to do the right job at the right time for the right price. And you now expand that. If I draw an analogy, surge pricing, you've heard of that term in ride business.
I've paid back for it.
If you look at it, localization had urgent fee before. If you look, you know, you want something quickly, you're gonna pay more for it. But now if you have enough people to do that at scale, and for something as easy as, does this make sense in your language? I don't need a PhD in language to do that for me. I need end user to do that for me. Yeah, it makes sense. And I can get you that quickly to do that at a very reasonable price. If I want to test my app in a market and I see, does it make sense? Does it look good? Is it performing? Are the terms resonate with the user? I can find you that person who can test it. But if I want to go also deeper and say, what is the latency? Hey, you're down there and your internet bandwidth is so low and you don't have access to all these. How does this, I don't want to say X app because there's an app called X, but Y app will perform. I can give you that signal. Say, how is, oh, I'm passing by here. Is this map correct? I can update and say, no, this map has been changed. You know, there's a reroute that's happening here. You're in Dubai and new building go up overnight. Bridges are demolished to make a bigger highway, and things are rerouted, and the map have to continuously change.
That's an interesting. The funny thing is that I live close to a bridge here in Seattle, and the GPS in my car, whenever I cross that bridge, there is a barge that is next to the bridge. That is when the satellite picture was taken. There was a barge there next to the bridge. That barge has been out since the beginning of the summer. So I know that that map is at least 5 or 6 months old, because it hasn't been updated, because the barge appears in that satellite photo that is there. So as you say, things need constant updates, and you need somebody to point that that thing needs an update. I think Waze and mapping technologies like that require constant updates that are user generated, but sometimes you need conscious effort. You need somebody that is asked to do an evaluation, and you're not just counting on crowdsourcing, which is free work.
That's right? What exactly. I was thinking about crowdsourcing. Remember 10 years ago when nowadays we go to a conference and everyone wants to talk about large language models. 10 years ago, it was crowdsourcing, I feel, right? Like everyone wanted to talk. It was going to revolutionize the industry. It failed, you know, hot take right here, but it failed because there wasn't any governance around it, right?
Exactly.
There wasn't any accountability. And I think crowdsourcing morphed into what we know today as the gig economy and, you know, platforms providing different services, which is what Uber is. And to your point, Hamid, like you built this platform, you have the economies of scales, you've got the hard parts figured out. And one of the biggest parts in my mind is that you need to figure out how to pay these people. You need to figure out how to find people, and you need to figure out how to pay them. And that's no small task, because employment laws in every country are super unique. And Uber has conquered or addressed, I would say, those challenges already in order to be able to provide drivers and, you know, the servers, the services that you are well known for already. So
testers, translators, exactly. Cooks.
Exactly. So you understand the compliance issues at the country, even at the city level,
right,
when it comes to many things. You understand the payment system. You can leverage a lot of learning from there in here. But more importantly is you also have access to a lot of other information in terms of what is the availability of skilled workers in the markets. You can access those. You also have that agility to move fast. So you mentioned crowdsourcing, Renato. So I call this responsible crowdsourcing, where you monetize on it. I can't just on Waze or Google, I get it. There's a speed trap here. Can you thumbs it up or down? I can choose whatever I want. If I might be in a hurry and I just ignore it, or I just give false information. But if you're getting paid for it and you're evaluated afterwards, because we build this evaluation system, I think one of the things that we want to make sure is the quality. How we evaluate the data that we get, the input, both for translation and others, is the important thing. That based on your performance, you may get more work or less work, or you have driver's rating, right? That's not about me coming and evaluating. It's about the user evaluating how was their ride.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And of course, tip takes a play, plays in there. But imagine you have that real-time evaluation of the journey that the people took, and you use that. Going back to localization, we for 34 years we use EPT, and like what does that mean? But now I tell you, no, yes, this localization makes sense in the language, and it provides seamless experience for people, and what we call here at Uber magical user experience. That's what your end goal is. And you simplify things. The ride is provided. I have a rating, have a review rating. You have a review rating. I do get more gigs and all that. And that's rating is also not coming from Uber. It's coming from the, in this case, client.
Mm-hmm. But how you Let's go into a little bit of the practical story. So Tucker, this might be a good time for us to show the video from Dara, the CEO. Yesterday, he gave an interview to Business Intelligence, and do you want to share that with us, Tucker? It's like 30 seconds.
Yeah, I'll bring it up here.
We can't hear him.
To be able to transition into over a long period of time. Maybe they go from driving to delivering to shopping. We're even now working on there's a group of our drivers and some non-drivers who are working on AI labeling and translation and essentially training AI agents as well as another kind of work, so that to the extent that there are autonomous vehicles coming onto the platform, maybe our drivers are training those autonomous vehicles. So we are working with expanding the scope of work.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's directly from the CEO of Uber.
Yes.
Right.
So the one of the things that you said earlier in the conversation is that it's something that it's available, it's easy, it doesn't require contracts and things like that. It would be like an Uber ride. So tell us a little bit about what is a typical type of project that you're getting? What kind of localization testing or localization language tasks are you receiving to do from the clients that you have that I imagine are Uber partners that already work with Uber in other services that are not just the rides?
That's an excellent question. So we have a wide variety of this, and then the customer list is from large tech who are building the next LLM, and they want to make sure they reduce the digital divide and serve the next 4 billion people. They want to know if Swahili, you know, there are LLM prompts for Swahili returns the right answer, or is not far off from the right answer. So let's put it this way. Is it written the right way? Does it make sense to use it? That's a customer. And they want it. They give you the project today and they want it tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Because
they don't want to pay a lot for it.
And they don't want to pay a lot for it. Right. They want to pay the right amount.
That's what I should have said.
Yeah.
Yes. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't want to be overcharged for it.
They want to you to do the scale. And at the same time, they want to make sure that the quality is at the acceptable user level for that market, because we know markets are different. And we have a company that wants to, is a remittance payment startup, wants to expand into the Arabic market. There are a lot of expatriates who work in well-off economies who send money back to their country. Mm-hmm. And there's a payout country and there's a receiving country, and you want to test this quickly, and you want people to be in that region, and we quickly test for them or even localize into that language. So they do a lot of their work with LLM, but when it comes to looking at the privacy statement to legal statement, they want someone who has proven that they can do a good job, and we do that quickly for them. So we give you MT for all of this. And the beautiful things about our localization process is that, unlike many vendors, we are not tied to one MT. Either use mine or we can work with you. We build the orchestrator level that you choose the best MT or LLM for that localization. And you also choose the right person, human in the loop, wherever you need it. So I think giving the customer the choice is the key to our work. So
I'm thinking of an anecdote that just to put us in the conversation about the resources that are used in this service. So I remember I was in Argentina with a colleague, and we were in a taxi, and I was asked about, it was a period where the economy was doing really, really, really bad. And we were talking about the quality of education in Argentina. And I told my colleague that Argentina has one of the top educational systems in the Americas. But one of the problems is that it generates an oversupply of talented people. And you had engineers, doctors, and scientists working as taxi drivers. And I'm having this conversation in English with my colleague. And the taxi driver turns around and speaks in flawless English. But the education is not as good as it was. When I became a doctor in the 1960s, the education was much better. So one of the side effects, let's put it, or situations that you have with the gig economy is that you have a lot of talented people. I have taken Uber drives with PhD students, with very talented people around the world that are doing this as a gig, as a side activity, as a way to make money. Do you leverage, is the network of users that you have? Because one of the comments that people have, we're going to take the drivers to be doing translations. We're going to take the drivers to be doing coding or things like that. But it's not the driver. They just happen to be in your system because they're drivers. But you're looking at real talent, right? Tell me a little bit about this process, this selection process.
This is an excellent point. I think, first of all, we have the Uber drivers. There's a very big diversity, both in terms of their language, their cultural background, their talent, skill set. The assumption that they may not be PhD or well-versed in an area is the wrong assumption. We do have a very elaborate assessment system where you, for the gig that you are going to sign up, you will go through a quick but very effective assessment, and we know your level, and we will not give a prompt evaluation that is about science or medical devices to someone who is just a linguist, right? The same way that we don't do that, we're not going to give this to someone who's his main job was driving and then he doesn't have the background. So we do that assessment, and we provide that assessment as one of the criteria for assigning the task. Having said that, there are many in the United States, if I want to give you a number, like the, just for your information, 80% of drivers speak English. The other 20% speak so many other languages. You can do a lot of your testing for languages during the time that these drivers or earners on the platform are not doing any driving. More than 10% of them speak Spanish.
So they're sitting at the corner of Main Street and 3rd and waiting for a ride, and they're doing some translations
while they're waiting? They won't do. So here is, we are very careful about that. They maybe say, hey, does this screen look right in Spanish?
Okay.
Does this term make sense? So they won't be like typing and driving. They could be sitting there. Or when they're at home and, you know, they've done, I don't know, 5 hours of driving. They're tired of driving. They want to do something else. They're like me. One of the things that I didn't mention here that I recently was privileged to be given the responsibility for Uber quality testing. And that's not about localization. It's the whole quality. They want to do something different. And they want to have another opportunity to earn money. Like Dara said, to us, autonomous vehicle is not a threat to the drivers. It's an opportunity for them to do, to train their next model and to also do something different. And there are a lot of people who are doing. So the autonomous driving will be as good as the drivers who train it and then the tech behind it. Same thing, we employ these people because they are the one who are going to use the LLM. They should evaluate if this is correct or not, not just the linguist. Linguists will provide the linguistic aspect, but the usability and other things. You need real people in that field to also provide the information.
So what kind of services would this be? Give me an example. Are they writing prompts? Are they, when you're talking about LLMs and language testing, you mentioned that they are reviewing responses. Let's say you get a prompt, test this prompt in Swahili, see if the response is similar or close to what the English provides you. What else?
Yeah, so they are reviewing that. They also providing different type of voices for training. Mm-hmm. Let me give you an example. There is a lot of fraud, AI used for fraud, impersonating Renato, talking with a deep voice, calling their bank, and authorizing 1 million transfer to Hamid.
Okay.
You've already kind of recorded Fidelity. I don't know.
I'm going to be processing the recording of this podcast afterwards to train, an AI on Hamid's voice.
Yeah, and then impersonating that.
Yeah.
Now, there are a lot of security companies who need data, who need different voices, different accents, to be able to train. Where do they go to? They can come to Uber and say, hey, you are in, can you provide me this? And this becomes an opportunity for them to have that training data, for example.
So how do, who comes to you? First of all, Uber hasn't been doing this for 10 years, right? This is a relatively new service, right?
There are aspects of this service that has been there for a long time,
really?
Like data annotation and image annotation and all that has been there for a long time, as long as we've been developing autonomous vehicles or other means. The AI and ML models have been there for a long time. That's why Uber, the whole GSS was created to provide in a scalable, the GSS division of Uber, global scale solution, provide the scalable services to the whole Uber. They have been around more than 6 or 7 years. So this service has been provided, but now we are expanding it and saying, hey, we are doing other things as well, and we are doing it really well at scale. So let's expand those. For example, when we spun off the autonomous vehicle division into Aurora, a separate company, they still use our services, and they were really happy with the quality that we provided. That's the idea behind this came from, actually.
Let's take a look at some of the services, right? Because I've got a slide here queued up. So just taking a look at some of the different services that you're offering over there. You have AI data labeling, testing, localization, content, digitize, map editing. So, and you have here at the bottom, 100 plus programs, 20 plus capabilities, 500 million tasks. Talk us through this slide a little bit, if you don't mind.
Sure. I think the data labeling scenarios resonate a lot with people on the autonomous vehicle side, on image recognition. It could be in an amusement park, and they want to look at the safety data. They want to see who's around kids there. It could be on LLM evaluation and annotating the data there, evaluating or rewriting prompt or rewriting translation of prompt. On testing side, the testing goes way deeper than what we consider here at the UI testing. We provide testing at the usability testing of an app. Does the internet bandwidth and performance work well in different regions for companies? Or it could be, I'm building a new set of features. I want to make sure I quickly test it within a week. We provide that service. I'm an insurance company. I have a lot of different scenarios. I want to test it. I've just released my app. On the localization, we provide both the translation, but a lot of review and audit, as well as LQA. We provide the tooling. You probably have seen the tool that we demo to you, Renato, and it's going to be at LogRoll, where we can do testing for languages at scale and automate that process. But they also have the human in the loop. Maybe that's going to give you 80% accuracy, but then we say, hey, we're going to put the human in the loop, a tester who knows Arabic out of Egypt or Jordan, take that 80% accuracy of this to 95%. Then we have the document digitization. There are, imagine insurance companies with all the paperwork that they have kept for, 34 years. They want to digitize a lot of things, the process that they take. On the map editing, I gave a couple of scenarios there already in terms of what can be done. The beauty is that you may bring your own tool or you want to use our tool. Mm-hmm. A lot of companies have developed their very elaborate tool, but they know they are only at 70-80% of accuracy. How do they make these their tooling better at the same time have a better experience for their users and their engineers, and they get 95%? A lot of companies, let's say Microsoft, they expect engineers to do testing as well. But how do they like that testing? How much the engineer is going to test? They want to code.
Yeah, people always think that anybody can test something, right? I've run across this in the localization space as well. It's like, oh, just get your translators to test it. And it's like, first of all, translators aren't testers. It's a different skill set. Second of all, translators don't want to do testing. They just don't.
Again, right? Also, you have that bias that comes in, right? You want to have a different pair of eyes looking at that and from a different angle. That translator can do review for you, can do audit, then can do proofreading, but does it make sense in this context? One of the things that we've seen that we translate to for drivers, it has to be different level of reading. They don't have time all day to read two sentence or three sentence in. They want to tell me what you want me to do. Go here, submit this form, and you're a driver. That's one I see. So we bring a lot of that experience to company who wants to build a new product. We can help them build it. A lot of people we work with, they think localization is just, I'll give you some content, you're going to give me in different language, and I'm done. Then we talk to them and say, no, we have to internationalize first. And we help them do that. Do you need your own TMS? Oh, do I need a TMS? Can I work without it? Oh, what is your content? Do I need a CMS? So a lot of that work also, we have a combined 30 plus years of experience. You've talked to James, you've talked to other people in the team. We bring that knowledge to the companies and the value add that we build this product for Uber. Now we can help you build it for yourself.
Yeah.
So same thing on testing side. Yeah, we have a TPM, technical program manager, who builds things at scale for Uber. Now can come and talk to you and say, which do you want to use, Selenium tool or another tool for your testing?
Right. Yeah. So this is what, and this is when I said, like, Uber hasn't been doing this for 10 years, right? It's like, well, you have. But what's new or relatively new is that you're offering it externally to people, to businesses that want to take advantage of it.
Exactly. Right. So what we are offering is, we know we have a platform. We know that platform has taken care of payment, has taken care of compliance and all that, has taken care of bringing people in masses to the platform. What we are bringing new is new set of skills and knowledge worker to leverage this platform to earn extra income and also solve a business problem. And the business problem is that I want the service now, I want it agile, and I want to just pay for what I use.
Right. Yeah. So what's the use case for this? And who would be a good candidate to use these services? Is it talking about like the small startup that doesn't have perhaps the resources to develop things internally? Or is it talking about the large corporation that just wants to throw a ton of work at your platform? Or both?
It is both. It is. I can't afford to sign a long-term contract to do localization testing with anyone. I don't know where my product going to go. Okay. I want to test the water.
That's what I was kind of thinking would be a good use case for this.
Yeah, this is where we can actually offer you and say, hey, here's what we did for you. But we think if you do it this way, you can actually do a better job. And we can combine it. The thing is that right now you go to a localization provider, that's all they do. Testing, the most they offer you, like Renato said, I have my linguist who can test for you. Like, well, I need different type of testing. We can do that for the company that come to us. Startups want to expand globally. And LLM is providing that ability to them. They think that they can use LLM to do, or Gen AI to localize into so many languages. And they are doing that, but they want that extra set of assurance. And maybe for a limited period of time, we can provide them. But we're also a long-term partner. If you look at Uber for Business, where Uber provide the rides or e-services to companies, it's a longer-term engagement. We also provide that, and that could be for well-established companies.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I was thinking. It's along the same model. It's like Uber, I can get a ride, just me, a schmuck on the street, you know, orders an Uber to the airport, right? But you guys also do large corporate contracts where they're providing rides at scale to an entire organization.
Exactly.
Same concept.
And I want to also emphasize another point. If you look at Uber model overall, we not partner with taxis. We partner with public transportation. So we don't look at them as competition. So even in this business of localization, we partner with other providers. We partner with the small businesses, language provider, or very small companies who are providing a niche, endangered languages. We work with them to bring them to platform. So it's this model of partnership with what usually was seen as your rival is extending here as well, because the ultimate goal is that you provide service quickly and with quality. And there is room for everyone in this business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the fascinating part of it. It's just that, first of all, what we know is that this is an industry where you have very little barrier to entry. And then it's also very cooperative. It's an industry where we talk a lot about co-petition, where you use LSPs to localize Uber, but you're also localizing services for other companies. So it's a, let's say, hybrid. I don't know if it is the right word, but it's an intricate model.
Symbiotic.
So we have a very, as you said, hybrid model, where we use linguists directly, freelancers directly, and we do use partners for certain areas. And also we provide that similar model for other areas as well. Because what we think is that the Uber marketplace has room for everyone to be part of this journey. So if you look in the right, there is a fleet model. There is the individual drivers and all that as well. And it's here also. Our goal is to make sure, for example, linguists and freelancers take home most of the money from a contract, as opposed to it's getting broken down so much that they don't, that they don't feel they are getting paid what the work actually is worth.
Yeah, it's important because essentially it's a supply chain management problem. It's a logistics problem. And if the supply chain's not happy, then no one's happy, right?
Yeah, and that's, I think, who better than Uber to manage that,
right?
Having already built it
right
for 100 hundreds of millions of drivers, and I would say billion of passengers.
Yeah,
I would say billions of riders. So the data that we have, very important point I want to make, we have a data team within the localization team that's now is extending to the testing team to look at all the data and provide this great analysis to companies. So we provide you that, you know, what type of services you need, and we give you that view and insight into dashboard for your testing or localization right away, saying, here's how much you know, what is the usability of this, or what is the leverage, how is the utilization rate? I want to localize this page. Does it make sense to use MT or human in the loop? I say, okay, what is your market size that you're going there? We can start with, you know, LLM and MT for you. We just review it and see if it generates some traction, then we pay more attention to it in the work there. So these are the things that we are doing at scale, both for Uber and for our partners today. And in terms of quality of testing, quality of service provided, and the agility, there should be no excuse in the business. So the other thing I want to mention is that business continuity is the biggest thing for people. Don't tell me I don't have resources to do this language right now. Give me option, go find it. If you're going to contract with someone else, go do it.
Exactly.
Just do the work.
Yeah, exactly. People don't care. They just want the problem solved.
Yeah, they want the problem solved, and we solve that problem.
Which is fair. Which is fair. That's, you know, that's the way it should be. I want to jump, Renato, I see another question on your lips, but I want to jump to the chat really quick to make sure we don't fall behind there. Some questions here in chat from Mohamed Al-Jundi. Hello, dears. We keep hearing that smaller LSPs are developing their own large language model solution. Do you think that in-house developed large language models are reliable? And I will open this up to Hamid and Renato, because I know you've been talking to a lot of LSPs out there as well, Renato.
So I think there's a myth that there is a lot of myth around that. There is the terminology that is used, that I'm developing my own LLM versus I am building on top of that LLM that's already there, whether it's an open source or...
Customizing an LLM.
Customizing. Like we...
Because I guarantee you there's not... I can't guarantee because I'm not sure.
So
I don't think there's that many LSPs out there that are developing from scratch their own large language model out there.
Yeah, so I'll give you a... Somebody send me that. Say, hey, we've developed our own LLM. It supports multilingual Persian and Arabic. I say, okay, I'm going to ask you something in Persian. I say, I typed the question in English, that what is the Farsi word for camel? He gave me the Arabic word for horse. So now when we talk about reliability, is as reliable as the data that you feed it, as good as the people who develop it and provide you data. And that's where the point that we have, that we provide reliable data for you to build your LLM. That's one of the things we're actually doing today as we externalize these services. When we get the data back, we also evaluate if two people are providing that, is there consensus between them? How far they are apart in their answer? So the answer is it reliable? It depends on the data. Mm. Is it their own LLM? I don't think so in most cases.
Yeah.
Anything to add, Renato, or we'll go to the next question?
No, same thing. I had an interesting interaction yesterday, and I tested it with three different LLMs. It was a funny thing in a translation from English into Spanish, and it was essentially something talking about four words that are so important, four words that you need to bring with you and remember always, and you're not alone. So the translation into Spanish was four words, and then the sentence was no estás sola, which is only three words, right? So there are this challenges that you have, that sometimes the task is not just a literal direct translation. You have to know some math also.
Exactly. And I think, imagine before Renato sees that and makes fun of it on this live show, you come to Uber and say, hey, you know, provide me some review. We'll be happy to do that. And then that brings your quality up. That's the point of the service that you're providing.
Yeah.
I know, Seb, you had a question. I just glanced at your screen, and one of the questions was it from Silvio at PayPal?
Yeah, yes.
Silvio says evaluation of search results. People already do this task.
They do it, but do they do it at scale? Do they do it for, you know, thousands of prompts in very little time? And is there a structure behind it? You know, people, if you come back to Uber, people were taking taxis to go somewhere. People were doing tasks, but now they are doing it better. They do it, they have more choices. What we are saying is that a lot of these things are already being done, but what Uber provides, it is scale, flexibility, customization, and affordability of the task that needs to be done. Absolutely, you're right, Seville, this has been done. And it predates even search.
Yeah, and I think it's being done. We've seen a lot of the Uberization of various tasks in industries in the last 10 years, I would say. And those tasks are things that are being done before. They're just now being put into a platform that's more user-friendly. I don't want to say user-friendly, but it's becoming more accessible for the people. It's connecting people. Is what it is, right? At the heart of the gig economy, it's all about connecting people. It's about connecting supply to demand, right?
It's so, the automation of the platform, right? So this whole process of making the connection. And Silvio has a follow-up question here that I think is interesting, which is essentially the summary of what we're talking about.
All right, we'll get to you, Kyle. But Silvio says, human feedback is expensive. Uber gets human feedback from multiple humans for free. i.e. driver ratings. They could get translation evaluation the same way, couldn't they? Is that the plan? I think this is, I love this because this gets to the heart of it, right? And like what I wanted to say about this when you're talking about this earlier, Hamid, is it gets, you know, feedback on the task. Let's say it's localization. Feedback on the task coming from the user, i.e. the purchaser of that task. So when we're talking about feedback on the translation, we're kind of getting away from this traditional DQF, LQA, you know, blah, 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 acronym, standardized ISO feedback on translation. And I can foresee a situation where the feedback is actually more relevant. It's less relevant and more relevant at the same time, because as you know, when you have non-linguists providing feedback on a translation, sometimes it's not the best feedback as far as like the quality, and I'm using air quotes for people listening as a podcast, of the translation, but it's relevant feedback because it's, is this going to accomplish the intended purpose that I have for it?
Exactly. It's about the experience the person has.
Right.
For example, on the testing side, the translation is very obvious, as Sylvie said. It's free, but it's part of the program. I mean, it sounds free and all that. It's part of the program. The ultimate feedback has to come from the user.
Right.
The expert, let's go to consumer report, right? Consumer report is very elaborate. How this is how the car was, all the scoring, great. But at the end of the day, people are going to go and buy the car for the experience that they have, for the money that they are spending. They would use that as one factor, but overall is, does it work for me? And we bring that. We say, does it work for our client?
Yeah.
And would they be repeat customers? Would they come out to us again? All the other linguistic, great. That's going to help, but the ultimate goal, the measure of quality is on the user side.
Which can be a challenge sometimes, I would say, because it kind of changes what we can use that feedback for, right? So I'll give an example. So traditionally you get feedback on a translation. Translation is bad. Well, now we can use that translation or that feedback to take corrective measures against, so to speak, the translator, either replacing them or, you know, having a conversation with them about their quality, giving them some more training, right? But when we're talking about providing feedback over the overall experience, is it necessarily the translator's fault? And I'll use an example, like a real life example from Uber Eats, for example.
Right.
If I order Uber Eats and it comes to me an hour late and the food is cold and the ice cream's melted, right? And I give a 1-star review on that driver, on that person delivering the food, was it really the driver's fault, or did he have to wait for an hour for the food at the restaurant?
And that's the beauty of the system is built at Uber, that we look at all that factors. Yes, that the driver is going to give that, but if we see over time, we see a certain period of time that I send 10 different drivers to the same restaurant, the food comes out cold to me, I know it's not a problem there. I go and fix it there. So that's the thing underlying technology that we've already built that can be used. That if the translator is working for a certain agency, are always late, but the same for translator works for a different agency, but they provide work on time, there is something going on. It could be that they are not getting paid the same between the two agencies, so they prioritize this work over the other work. Mm-hmm. So is there a way to find out? Mm-hmm. There's probably the way to find out, but ultimate responsibility relies on that agency now that nobody's going to go to.
Well, and this is the kind of data and analytics and KPIs that require scale in order to have meaningful conversations about, right? Because like you said, if... In the example that you use, well, let's look at 10 other examples of drivers that went to that same restaurant. Well, if you don't have that scale, then the data is less meaningful because you don't have the averages to compare it to.
Right.
The baseline.
And that answers the other question that anybody can do that. But anybody can do that, but not at scale and with this amount of information that can optimize the system for you.
Right. Right.
So I have two practical questions. So let's say that I want to work with Uber Global Scaled Solutions. Do I have to download an app? Do I have a Uber GSS app? Or do I have to call you? Do I go to your website? How does one engage with this type of service?
So
the second question, you can answer it, is will we see Uber in the NIMSY 100 next year, maybe 2026.
Maybe, yeah. We'd love to be on that list, and we'd love to be in top 50 of that 100. It all comes to the execution, the team. We have full confidence. You played the video of Dara. He's behind it, and he's putting Uber name behind it. So we better get our work together to be there. Because we are betting on this as a growth business. In terms of people coming to the platform, there is the forms and the site that we can share for people to come on board, and there are different ways for them to come on the platform, depending where they are and all that. That's all can be shared on our site as well.
It's Scaled Solutions, right? You have to search for...
Yeah, we'll provide that information as a follow-up and you can see it.
Yeah.
Right. Cool. Yeah, maybe just go leave it in the comments on the LinkedIn session. That way people can find it if they're watching the recording. One last question, and I know I'm watching the clock, we're running out of time here, but I do like to make sure I get to as many questions as possible. Kyle asks, how is your team sourcing and expanding the talent pool with correct background and experience to solve your end client needs? And I'll expand on that just a little bit. Like, does Uber undertake active recruitment efforts to expand into all of these different, all of these different services that we have here? AI, data labeling, testing, localization, content, digitization, map editing. Is this like an active recruitment effort? Or are you taking a look at the talent pool that you already have accumulated over the years?
It is both of these. Is actively you need, in the industry, a lot of platforms and companies, we have 1 million active users in our platform ready to help you. But when you go talk to them, it's probably 10,000. And then for a certain task, it's 500. So to address the question that we talked first from the comment on the LinkedIn, we do both background check, we do assessment of the skill level, and we do have what we call a practice gig for them,
okay,
to show how good they are on the task they do. So all this would help us evaluate them. It's a process that we have built over time for other businesses, and now we are utilizing that. Also, we are learning from other companies who have built the process and see where the gap are, and you know, making improvement there.
Very good. Thank you, Hamid. Renato, any final questions before I start wrapping us up?
No, I think that it's interesting to some last year when we were analyzing the industry, one of the, I wouldn't say forecast, but one of the observations that we made is that for many, many years, buyers, traditional buyers of translation and localization services, were trying to transform localization from a cost center into a profit center. And what Uber is doing here is essentially transforming this area of expertise. How many people do you have in your team, in this team, Hamid? We didn't talk about that.
So we do, within localization team, for example, I manage two teams now. I lead two teams. The localization is about 30 people. Yeah. And five of them are focused on data and looking at the data and using that. And on the quality side, we have about 20-25 as well. And there's a team there that is very technical, about technical program management, that provide solutioning as well. So if you imagine, let's say 50 people working, and of course there's a support team, like to address the question, there's a support team that on the supply side, and there's a support team on the demand side. Yeah.
So you're a 100 people organization, if you consider your financial people, your recruiting people, and all the stuff, right? So you're a medium-sized LSP that you can transform from just a cost center into a profit center, which is what companies want. So you don't want to depend on other people's budgets if you can generate your budget, the budget yourself. And we wrote about this in the NIMSY 100. We already had indications from that Uber was going this way, but we see companies like Canva offering some of the services inside their systems. There are other platforms that are trying to do this. I think that we're going to see more companies going this way with the democratization, let's put it this way, of the process. But not every company has the kind of support and drive that Uber is getting from top management. What is unique, I believe, from the Uber initiative is that it is the perfect model. It is an intermediate between people, tasks, and clients. And you do it well, you do it at scale, you do it in multiple languages. So I think it's a natural development for Uber to be doing this, and to have somebody like you with years of experience in this area on the buyer side, having seen how the services are provided by multiple vendors from in all levels in multiple companies, gives you a unique position to create this new type of service. So you're probably at the forefront of a new trend. You're an innovator in this space. Many have tried before, but I think that the conditions are perfect, and the timing is good for a solution like this. So congratulations on the initiative, and good luck, Hamid. I think that it's fascinating to hear your journey and to hear this experience and these new services that you're providing.
And thank you. I want to just plug in, this is beyond localization, it's testing in other areas. The one thing I want to add is we've done this for Uber, where we say, if we do this and localize this, we're going to bring 10x or 100x of the cost that we're going to spend here, and that actually works.
Yes.
Saying, okay, and we can do that for other companies, that what is the growth factor that localization can bring? Or what is the growth factor that a good experience, first experience, where the quality has been checked ahead of time, can bring to a team? You may get 10 times ROI on your spend on localization testing and other work. That's the key, that it's not just that I'm going to save cost, is I'm going to actually enable growth for you.
I think that's a great place to end. Yeah. And yeah, typically I would say, Hamid, what are your closing thoughts? But after Renato's great summary and your clarifications there, I think that's a great place to end. Hamid, thank you so much for taking time. I know that you are super busy. We are already finishing 1 minute late, so you're probably already late for three more meetings that you have. And yeah, look forward to seeing you and look forward to seeing the audience here next week for everyone that's attending Local.
Great. Thanks for hosting me and having me on the show, and looking forward to talk about this more in person at Lockworld or tomorrow.
Awesome.
Very. We're going to see each other tomorrow as well.
Oh, we are going to see each other tomorrow. I'll be down in San Francisco tomorrow. So
yes.
Yeah. Oh, I should probably check in for my flight. Okay. I'm going to take us out here. Ladies, gentlemen, chat. We are out of time for today. If you enjoyed this episode of NIMSY Live, join us next time. I don't know what next time is, but go to NIMSY's LinkedIn page and look at our events. And I know we got a couple scheduled coming up. I appreciate our guest today, Hamid. I appreciate my co-host, impromptu co-host, Renato Beninato, and all of my colleagues here at NIMSY Insights doing all of the hard work so I can have these interesting conversations. And finally, I appreciate you, the audience, who are joining us live today. And I look forward to next time. Cheers.